Our next speaker is Edward Stringham, who is Associate Professor of Economics at San Jose State University. Ed is also president of the Association of Private Enterprise and a contributing author to our book, Opposing the Crusader State. He received his PhD in economics from George Mason University. He's editor of the Journal of Private Enterprise and also the book Anarchy in the Law, which is a new book also from the Institute, and the book Anarchy, State, and Public Choice. I'm also pleased to point out that Professor Stringham's chapter in Opposing the Crusader State received the Institute's biannual Olive Garvey Fellowship Award.
Okay, today I want to talk about the contents of my chapter in this volume, the best chapter, Commerce, Markets, and Peace, Richard Cobden's Enduring Lessons. Richard Cobden was an English writer from the 1800s, and although his writings are a century and a half old, Cobden addressed many arguments made for military intervention still being made today, and I think that we can learn a lot from his writings, so I want to focus on some of them. So what's the issue? Many people believe, back then and today, that free markets and war go hand in hand. In a review of Hayek's Road to Serfdom, George Orwell declared, he said, capitalism leads to dole queues, the scramble for markets, and war. If we look at the past century, we see significant advances in markets, but we also see a century plagued with war. Do capitalism and conflicts go hand in hand? Are military and markets complements? Indeed, many conservative advocates of markets are also passionate supporters of military, and many who oppose markets also oppose war. Richard Cobden, in contrast, argued just the opposite. He maintained that military and markets are substitutes. More military means less market. Cobden discussed whether military spending was beneficial to the economy, commerce, and peace, and in all cases, he answered no. So let me go through and discuss some of the reasons why, and then conclude why the advocate of markets is actually an advocate of peace. Cobden's first set of arguments emphasized the cost of military spending. He began his pamphlet with a quote from George Washington's farewell address, where Washington made the political case for entanglements with none and trade with all. Richard Cobden outlined an economic case. Unlike later economists who are influenced by Keynes, Cobden was not an adherent of the broken window fallacy. He said that whenever the government devotes resources to the armies and the navies, it comes at a cost. Quote, every farthing of which goes in the shape of taxation from the pockets of the public. The discussion was important to Cobden because he didn't view all of government's expenditures as promoting the public good. He actually saw that military spending was a drain on the economy. Now, what does the public get? He said, although England's international affairs were conducted under the pretext of the public good, Cobden believed that much of public policy was solely benefited special interests. He wrote, the honors, the fame of war belong not to the middle and the industrious class. The battle plain is the harvest field of the aristocracy, watered with the blood of the people. He says this is bad for the everyday person. He says no person possessing sound reason will deny that we, who find it necessary to levy millions annually, must be burdened with grievous disadvantages when brought into commercial competition with the untaxed labor of the inhabitants of America. Okay, remember, America was relatively non-interventionist at this time. He says America was following a better policy. He says a policy from which so much wealth, prosperity, and moral greatness has sprung. He says America is a spectacle of the beneficent effects of that policy, which may be comprised in this maxim: as little intercourse betwixt governments, as much connection as possible between the nations of the world. Cobden's second set of arguments addressed those who use commerce as a justification for a war. While commerce obviously has beneficent characteristics, perhaps society has to take the bad with the good. The two choices might be to accept markets and militarism or oppose them both. So if you support commerce, must you support war too? Cobden recognized the popularity of this view. He writes that British intervention has usually been excused under the pretenses of protecting our commerce. But to Cobden, this is a false marriage. Markets and military do not go hand in hand. He believed that the commerce justification for military spending was completely illegitimate. He writes, "Do we need an augmentation of the naval force in order to guard our ingenious artisans and industrious laborers, or to protect those precious results of their mechanical genius, the manufactories of our capitalists?" He says the success of an economy depends on free enterprise, which does not depend on military spending. And we can see this by looking at where government devotes their military resources. Cobden discussed how there was free trade, basically free trade between England and America, but he asked, he says, now what precaution is taken by the government of this country to guard and regulate this precious flood of traffic? With great passion, Cobden argued that the commerce was hardly dependent on the Navy. He writes, how many vessels of war, which are maintained at the expense of the nation of many millions of pounds annually, are stationed to welcome and to convoy the merchant ships bearing the inestimable freight of cotton wool upon which our commercial existence depends? So how many ships are protecting commerce? His answer, not one. Or the army, he goes, what portion of our standing army costing $7 million a year is occupied in defending the golden stream of trade on which floats not only the wealth, but the hopes and the existence of a great community? To him, his answer is, four invalids hold the office of defending the port of Liverpool. So to him, the world is just too big to police. There's so much commerce going around the globe. And if you look at where the government is spending military resources, it's not protecting commerce. It's usually protecting other military establishments. So why are the arguments in favor of military made in the name of commerce? Why are they so popular? He says one reason is the legacy of mercantilism, under which government played an active role attempting to manage the economy. So this included establishing foreign trading monopolies by law. Since the government had to maintain these commercial monopolies with armed forces, the discussion of commerce and military went hand in hand. Cobden argued, however, that the legacy of mercantilism, that should be abandoned. Okay, this is an old-fashioned doctrine. He says the men of war to conquer colonies to yield us a monopoly of their trade must now be dismissed. To him, a simple solution as an alternative to mercantilist policies is to implement policies friendly to business. Triumph in the world market is determined by successful private enterprise, not by military might. Replacing military relations with commercial relations would have the advantages, including bringing more peace. He says, but besides dictating the disuse of warlike establishments, free trade arms its votaries by its own pacific nature in that eternal truth. The more any nation traffics abroad upon free and honest principles, the less it will be in danger of wars. Rather than creating antagonistic relationships, trade encourages peaceful relations between nations. Cobden's final set of arguments address those who try to use liberty as a justification for war. Cobden first made his case for non-intervention by appealing to the self-interest of his fellow citizens. He wrote, "Our sole object is to persuade the public that the wisest policy for England is to take no part in these remote quarrels. we shall claim the right of putting the question upon footing of self-interest. He says, we are not called upon to preserve the peace and good order of the entire world. He says, although many problems exist, becoming involved in every single one of them would be futile. He says, upon what principle, commercial, social, or political, in short, upon what ground consistent with common sense, does the foreign secretary involve Great Britain in the barbarian politics of the Ottoman government, to the manifest risk of future wars and the present pecuniary sacrifice attending the standing armaments? When I read all of this, I thought, did he make a mistake? Wasn't he talking about the United States in Iraq today? But I don't know. Maybe in the reprinting they missed that part. He argues against what he calls meddling in the affairs of foreigners. Next case he made for non-intervention was made by addressing the humanitarian-sounding arguments for military. When a country is blessed with more liberty, does compassion compel that we help others attain it too? While Cobden certainly favored advancing liberty throughout Europe, he believed military action was not the answer. As Higgs has demonstrated, war nearly always leads to an increase in government power. Cobden wrote, "For let it never be forgotten that it is not by means of war that that states are rendered fit for the enjoyment of freedom. On the contrary, whilst terror and bloodshed reign, there can be no process of thought, no education going on, which can prepare people for the enjoyment of rational liberty." Rather than trying to fix every problem around the globe using might, he said England should stay out. He lists all the problems, and he says, with such elements of discard as these fermenting all over Europe, it becomes more than ever our duty to take natural shelter from the storm, from entering into which we could hope for no benefits. Cobden believed that the humanitarian course of action, rather than being intervention, was one of laissez-faire. He says, England, by calmly directing her undivided energies to purifying of her own institutions, to the emancipation of her commerce, would serve as a beacon of other nations and aid more effectually political progression all over the continent than she could possibly do by plunging herself into the strife of European wars. He says that acting as a model for others to follow would be far more helpful than trying to get embroiled in their conflicts. To Cobden, the fruitful alternative is free trade, because markets and trade create peaceful bonds between otherwise separate parties. Cobden wrote, England, and you'll see who he's referring to when he's referring to England in a second. He says, England has united forever two remote hemispheres in the bonds of peace by placing Europe and America in absolute and inextricable dependence on each other. England's industrious classes, through the energy of their commercial enterprise, are influencing the civilization of the whole world. So this is England's industrious classes are influencing the civilization of the whole world by stimulating the labor and, above all, by teaching to surrounding nations the beneficent attachment to peace. Arguments for the military in the name of markets have a long history. They're still being made today. But 19th century writer Richard Cobden addressed these arguments head on. Economic success depends on private enterprise, not military might. Armed forces may play an important role promoting commerce under mercantilism, but not under a policy of free trade. By standing by the principles of free trade and by serving as a beacon or as a lighthouse, we can advance liberty more effectively than by going to war. Contrary to prevailing views, markets and war do not go hand in hand. The market promotes peace. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed.